It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, how soup in Fort Smith can help some area children have a better weekend. Plus, students at the University of Arkansas will be in charge of soup, salad, and everything else at the Crescent Hotel for an upcoming weekend.
We also have a wrap-up of the month ahead in visual arts and go to a church to learn more about how art and faith can be closely related.
First, Arkansas immigration reform advocates from the business and agriculture industries are praising U.S. House Speaker John Boehner's recent proposal for an incremental approach to changing the nation's immigration policies. In a conference call with reporters, representatives from the Arkansas Farm Bureau and the Chamber of Commerce spoke of the need for better managed employee verification systems and new work visa rules. They say that would allow both highly skilled and seasonable laborers to better fulfill the demand for workers in various industries. Bo Bishop is with the Arkansas Farm Bureau.
You know, it's almost laughable that we don't have a verification system that's streamlined to protect the employers, you know, who follow the protocol. So often today you'll hear about an employer being presented with the proper paperwork, and the system doesn't catch the fact that they're dealing with someone who's in this country illegally.
Bishop says specialty crops and dairy farms in the state are in particular need for migrant labor. Meanwhile, Steve Copley of Interfaith Arkansas says measures like the DREAM Act should be a priority among the slate of proposals.
So we're excited to see one proposal is to reach out to these young folks who came here, no issue or fault of their own, now have graduated from high school, either want to serve our country in the military or go to college and try to live the American dream.
He says over the next two decades, there will be an estimated 11,000 undocumented Arkansas residents who arrived in the country before the age of 16.
With winter precipitation in the forecast for the coming days and with major road construction projects scheduled to begin or continue throughout 2014, the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department is reminding Arkansas drivers about its relatively new roads condition page, iDriveArkansas.com. While the page currently shows construction zones and potential delays, department spokesman Danny Straisley says the interactive page will soon be able to suggest alternate routes around construction zones.
Some of the larger projects on Interstate 40 in the eastern part of the state, you know, a lot of traffic comes out of the Memphis area, and Interstate 40 between Little Rock and Memphis, heavy traveled corridor, and backups can go for hours, unfortunately, at times. And so we're adding a feature on there that will let motorists know, hey, there's a traffic delay ahead. Here's an alternate route that you can look at and consider. So what we're doing is we're producing more information to help the motorists make a more informed decision about what their travel can be.
Straisley said there is another multimedia-based feature on the way for the website.
The Highway Department has traffic cameras all over the state and around the tunnel and here in Little Rock and several other areas around the state. And we will be making the video from those traffic cameras available to the public on iDriveArkansas.com. So we're pretty excited about that. We're working out some capacity issues as far as providing the bandwidth, because we really think it's going to be a pretty big hit and something that's in high demand. So we want to make sure that when it's delivered to the public that it is ready for the public without any problems.
Although the website is currently viewable on mobile devices, Straisley says that when the new features are complete, standalone apps for Android and iOS devices will be developed.
Because of snow and icy road conditions, recycling and solid waste collections in Fayetteville have been postponed indefinitely. According to the city, collection services will be delayed until road conditions improve so collections can continue in a safe manner. The city's solid waste division will reassess streets tomorrow to make a decision on resuming collection services. In addition, the city's recycling and trash transfer station, recycling facility on North Street, and city compost facilities are closed until further notice. Also, city offices are closed today, and tonight's city council meeting has been canceled. The University of Arkansas is now closed all day today as well.
Spring enrollment numbers are in for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. The college is reporting full-time equivalent enrollment dropped 4% to just under 5,100 students this semester. The total headcount for the university also declined nearly 6% to just over 6,200 students this semester. However, the unofficial census day totals showed a 6% increase in upper-level student semester credit hours and an 11% increase in high school students enrolled concurrently at UAFS.
A longtime member of the University of Arkansas Athletics Department will retire at the end of this academic year. Bev Lewis, the former director of women's athletics and current associate vice chancellor and executive associate athletic director, announced yesterday she'll retire effective June 30th. Lewis has been in her current position for 6 years, during which time she helped merge the men's and women's athletic departments into one department. Prior to that, she was the director of women's athletics for 19 years and helped increase women's participation in athletics with the addition of volleyball, golf, gymnastics, and softball programs. And before assuming the women's athletics director post, she coached the Razorback women's cross country and track teams and garnered the first national ranking and first two top 10 NCAA championship finishes for women's cross country.
With the wintry precipitation that has moved into the area, many burn bans have been canceled. According to the Arkansas Forestry Commission, only 12 counties in Arkansas are currently under burn bans, none of which are in northwest Arkansas, and the wildfire danger has abated for all of the state. Forecasters with the National Weather Service in Tulsa say the snow received Sunday and the freezing rain and sleet of today are being caused by a strong upper-level storm system moving through the area. Robert Darby is a lead forecaster with the Weather Service.
That's producing areas of sleet, snow, and freezing rain. It looks like that system's going to start to move to the east this afternoon. There'll be lingering areas of light freezing drizzle possible. And then we have a very cold air mass that's going to be moving into the area Wednesday and Thursday.
Darby says that cold air mass could cause wind chill values to fall below 0 degrees. He also says the cold will remain through the week, and a storm system that forecasters expect to move into the area early next week could bring with it more wintry precipitation.
Tonight, cloudy, a chance of snow and freezing drizzle before midnight, lows from 15 in northwest Arkansas to mid-20s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Highs will be around 24 in northwest Arkansas, but the wind chill around 1 for the Arkansas River Valley. Highs tomorrow in the upper 20s. Tomorrow night, cloudy, a low of 5. Wind chills as low as 7 below in northwest Arkansas. Lows in the mid-teens tomorrow night for the Arkansas River Valley. Wind chills as low as 5. This is Ozarks at Large. If you've been paying any amount of attention to Arkansas news, you know the private option funding mechanism for healthcare in Arkansas is up for reauthorization during the legislature's fiscal session that begins next week. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently sat down with two Republican legislators on opposite sides of the private option. Senator David Sanders helped develop the private option. Representative David Meeks opposed it. They talked to Roby on the program Capital View on KARK-TV in Little Rock last weekend. You'll also hear the voice of Roby's co-host for that program, David Goines.
There's a significant amount of time and you know, the compression of time and all the artfulness of a fiscal session, which I guess this will be our third. I think there's still a lot to be worked out. But obviously, you know, it is healthcare, the private option, which was Arkansas's alternative to following sort of the Obamacare Medicaid expansion rollout that was set forth in the Affordable Care Act, is the preeminent issue. And I think what is different, where we find ourselves today, rather if we were sort of flip back and go back to April of last year, is, you know, what was conceptual, what was a estimate, what was an actuarial report, a concept that, you know, that we had come up with, is operational now, and that operational in terms of people getting private insurance, who folks in other states in this population are getting Medicaid and some aren't getting anything at all, that's happening. But you also see states like Iowa, Republican Governor Terry Branstad, Republican Governor of Pennsylvania, and now Utah, which may be the most Republican state in the union, emulating this policy. So I think ultimately will rise and fall on the policy. And, you know, we're just into phase one. We have phase two elements that we're working on right now.
Do either of you, Representative Meeks or Senator Sanders, do you see proof that it is working as you envisioned it to work? or maybe proof that's not working, Representative Meeks?
Well, you know, I think that's the whole point is, and as you said, it's going to have a hard time, I think, passing as is in the session just because there are so many things that, we've seen crop up. And one of the big things was the reimbursement with the doctors. One of the things that we were told is it was going to work just like private insurance. And then for the Blue Cross and Blue Shield to come back and say we're going to pay specialists 15% less for those that are on the private option, I think that's one of the speed bumps that you've seen hit. We've also now see that as of right now, there's no premium for those that are on a private option. There's no co-pays, no deductibles whatsoever. And that also is an issue as well. And again, I know that some of that stuff could change if we get into the second phase, but those are just a couple of the issues right now that we're seeing with the private option.
I mean, you voted against it,
yes,
last year, but has anything really been different from what you thought it would be last spring?
Well,
a
little
exactly
bit.
What you thought, and that's why you're still.
I think there's been a little bit that has changed. There are some things in the private option that I see that I do like, and there are some things that I see that I don't like. I've spoken with Senator Sanders and others, and in concept, it's a good thing. You know, getting people off a broken Medicaid system, getting them onto a private insurance. The issues, the big issue is the number of people that we're going to put on it. Is it sustainable in the long term? And I think that as it is right now, it's not. Yeah, right now the federal government, which happens to be $17 trillion in debt, is picking up the cost of it, adding more to our federal debt. But in a few years, Arkansas is going to have to start picking up the cost. And I think that's where you start running into the issues. Is it sustainable long term? As it is right now, I don't think that it is.
Senator Sanders, speak to the points that he's making. And also tell me what tweaks need to be made, you think, to convince some legislators who are either on the fence or who are persuadable to come over and agree with your position?
Well, a couple things. If people are watching who actually are on the private option today, if you fall within the category of 100 to 138% of federal poverty, you actually do have copays. That's required. And that was part of the law. Part of it is you want to phase it in. So what we're working on right now is, I say, the heart and soul of the private option. And look, just because someone's on health insurance doesn't mean that's not a formula for success long term. What is going to be a formula of success, not only for the private option, but for our teachers' insurance and our state employees' insurance, but you and everybody in the studio, is that we stop being users of healthcare and become consumers of healthcare. So what we're working on right now is a very significant component of this, which is the development of the health savings account for this population. And what originally, when we started, was going to be a pilot is much bigger and much more impactful. And you've seen states like Indiana, South Carolina, other states that have used health savings accounts for this population and have done it with great success. So we know that's a key element. That's being developed now. We've hired former Republican governor of Utah, former Bush administration HHS secretary, Health and Human Services secretary, Governor Leavitt, to write those amendments to the waiver. And that is, I think that's some of the things that David and I really agree on.
Should there be means testing?
In terms of means testing, you're testing income, mm-hmm. And I think what we want to do is not only check income, at the point of enrollment, but throughout the process. Because the idea is, as people earn more and move up the income scale, they should be able to pay more.
Right.
So you're developing cost sharing for people at 50 to 100%, and then we're talking about actually taking existing Medicaid fee-for-service populations and moving them to the private option. I'm going to say this about insurance and health care. Representative Meeks brought it up, and it's certainly an issue, and that is Blue Cross Blue Shield made the decision to reimburse specialists 15% less commercial rates, their commercial rate. Now, and remember, go back a year ago, everybody in the healthcare community was saying, we want Medicaid expansion, which we all know reimburses at a lower level. I'm fearful of, and I don't think it'll work, if you start to see political influence and lawmakers getting in the middle of sort of private or what is a private entity's negotiation with their contractors. We don't want that. That's sort of the pathway to single payer, which is not what I want at all. I want the private market to work. But what ultimately will take care of that is putting together a market that is Arkansas that looks competitive, so that there will be other competitors and carriers come into the state and compete for that business. So I think that's important. I don't want to go there.
Well, you know, and I would say, you know, on that one, yeah, we don't want the government to start interfering, but you got to remember these are taxpayers' dollars that was being used. One of the things that that was said in the private option is that, hey, they are going to be reimbursed at private insurance rates. So for them to kind of make that assumption
They determine what their rates
are.
I
understand.
Not us. We don't want to go there.
What changes would be possible from your perspective to the private option and still kind of keep it, afloat?
Yeah, there are some things that are certainly being talked about. Some of the House members have talked about that. You know, one thing that we think is significant is because of Iowa's experience and that the fact that they're following our lead, they actually got approval to waive non-emergency transportation now, and that was one of the things. In fact, it's like the one wrap benefit. That's a benefit not provided in insurance, but provided by Medicaid that we were told you may have to keep, and we have it now. So what I think,
and that essentially Medicaid pays for people going to the hospital.
Yeah, so if you don't, and it works this way: if you don't have access to to transportation, they will pay for it. Well, okay. What we're going to seek. And this is just one thing, and I think this would be something that Representative Meeks is supportive of, is to get that waived. Get the same thing that Iowa did, because now you see other states emulating us. They're gonna improve upon it. They're gonna tweak on it. And the fact is, we have to come back every single year and re-up in a regular session or fiscal session. We want to make use of the innovations that other states develop, you know, following our lead. So I think we've got that sort of built-in innovation into the plan. And the thing is, I think where we are today, we've done enough, and in terms of the estimates that were projected, in terms of even the average rate, you know, we were told that the average rate may be just south of $10,000. Well, it's not. It's $4,700 an annual rate. You know, I think it deserves another year at least.
Representative Meeks, could you be persuaded to change your vote to vote for the private option?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough. You know, we are limited in the fiscal session. I think some of the changes that I would like to see in it would take, actual legislative. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's been brought up lately by Representative Bruce Westerman is the fact that the people in the private option are given a silver plan, and we've asked our teachers lately to help save there or to help shore up their insurance plan that, hey, you need to go down to the bronze plan in order to make it more sustainable. Of course, that would take a change in the legislation because the legislation at this point says silver plan. But you know, there are some other things too. I think we need to limit it, because again, as it stands right now, I think it's too broad. It's going to cost too much. When Arkansas has to start picking up some of the tab, it's just not going to be possible to be sustainable to the Arkansas taxpayer in the long run.
How much time is spent on making changes, tweaks, the private options to try to keep it afloat, or do you jump over to Plan B? It ain't working. We need to find another way.
Listen, so here's a point. I'll make it right now. Bronze level plan and the teacher plan is an HSA. What we're talking right now is working on developing the HSA for this population. That's significant because, I mean, he identified an area where he could get, and maybe even sure. Bruce Westerman could get, so I think that's going to be critical, and hopefully we'll have some news on that.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked to State Senator David Sanders and State Representative David Meeks this weekend. The conversation also included David Goins, the co-host of KARK-TV's program Capital View. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas, diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity: coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
In about 12 minutes on Ozarks at Large, we have our monthly look at visual arts in our region, including a visit inside St. Nicholas Church in Springdale to understand how faith and art can have a deep connection.
So that picture up there, that icon, represents all of our theology in one little picture. And even if someone can't read or has no understanding of theology or is a small child, they can grasp the depth of our church's theology.
That story ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
Robin Young, one of the great things about Here and Now is our consortium of stations from around the country that are bringing us news that you don't hear anywhere else, whether it is a political story in Kentucky about prisons in California or wildfires in Arizona.
Right. It's just been terrific to have this broad reach. Jeremy, it's getting awfully crowded in here.
We've got a lot of voices.
That's right.
NPR's Here and Now, this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Later this month, the President's Day holiday will mean sales at local stores and a three-day weekend for students who aren't busy making up snow days. For some of these students, it also means 3 days without adequate nutrition. To help ensure kids are fed during the President's Day weekend, the River Valley Regional Food Bank has organized a new soup drive called Have a Super Weekend. Ken Kupchick, Director of Marketing and Development for the Food Bank, says the food drive is in response to children becoming ill following the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday last month.
Kids were coming back to school on the Tuesday and going into the nurse's office sick. When I talked to the elementary school teacher about that, she says this happens a lot on the three-day weekends. 3 days without nutritional food to these kids, and they come back to school depleted. She says, I feed them a breakfast, and sometimes that rush of nourishment will make their bellies sick. She says, I have this problem a lot on three-day weekends. So the obvious thought was, we have another one come February. We need to do something about it. So not only is this the first time, we're doing it as quickly as possible.
And the idea is, you know, there's a lot of children in the River Valley and even here in Northwest Arkansas who receive free or reduced lunch because of the lower income that their parents make. And so sometimes when they're at home, they aren't getting that nutrition because their parents just can't afford it.
That's true. And I think what would surprise you would be to learn just how many children we're talking about, especially at the elementary school level. In the Fort Smith School District, there are 7,000 elementary school kids. 6,000 of those 7,000 are getting a free or reduced price meal. So think about it. That's almost 9 out of 10 kids.
That's quite a few. That's a significant portion of elementary school kids. And that's just in Fort Smith.
Yes, definitely. Southern Sebastian County is a little better off, and as we go county to county, we see different levels of participation. But in Fort Smith, it's real and it's hard. We have 10 elementary schools in our school district. Half of them have enrollments at 90% or more with participation in the free and reduced lunches, which means there's that many children whose parents just simply don't have the resources to adequately feed them, that the government is stepping in and saying, we need these kids well-nourished in order for them to learn.
So how are you going about collecting these cans for your soup drive?
Well, we're lucky in that the Boy Scouts were already doing scouting for food. So next weekend, hopefully people will be filling plastic bags left on their doorstep this past weekend with some staples out of their own pantries to provide the Boy Scouts. All that food will come here. And we're asking them if they would, on top of what they normally would give, to please throw in one can or two of soup with hopefully an easy open can for the kids and a soup that has nourishment in it, you know, fruits, meats and vegetables, so that the kids can get a meal out of that can of soup. Every can we get from the Boy Scouts, we will segregate out and specifically give to this program, Have a Super Weekend. That's the first thing we're doing. The second one is the public library system here in Fort Smith graciously offered to help us. And anybody between now and the 12th of February can drop off a can of soup at any of the library locations here in Fort Smith. We'll take that and add it to the kitty as well. Then the third thing we're doing is we have some wonderful partners here in the River Valley. Every school has partners in education, and those that know about the program are coming in guns a-blazing, and they're all holding soup drives at their places of business. And then on top of that, there are others that are just very good friends to the food bank and what we do. So they're doing it as well. Altogether, we have about a dozen partners right now, including some of the major corporations here in town and Mercy Medical Hospital. So with that, that's the third arsenal that we have, the third wheel in this process to get us the soup that we need. We'll take it here at the food bank. We're going to break it down into servings for every elementary school child that we know, and then drop them off on Valentine's Day. So every kid is going home Valentine's Day with a gift, a little Valentine's gift from the community, and a wish to have a super weekend.
And you have a goal of a certain number of cans you're trying to collect, correct?
Absolutely. As it turns out, if we can collect just 2,000 cans, then that'll be enough for the schools with the most chronic problem. The kids where 90% or more are facing a hunger insecure, a food insecurity situation every day. If we can get to 3,500 cans, we've pretty much hit the main problem here in Fort Smith. If we can collect 7,000 cans, we can do the entire school district with our public elementary school kids. And then if we were fortunate enough to get 13,500 cans, that's actually enough to do an 8-county area, because half the population in this area is in Sebastian and Crawford County. If we hit that, we can hit the rest of the area as well and get this food into rural Arkansas where it's needed most.
And if I know this is the first time you guys are doing this particular type of drive for children over a 3-day weekend, is this, if it's successful, is it something you plan to keep doing?
Absolutely, especially for Martin Luther King and President's Day in January and February, especially because look at the weather we're having right now. When it gets cold, utility bills are higher than anticipated. That always has an impact on food budgets. And we're dealing with snow days. Today, schools throughout northwest Arkansas and west central Arkansas are closed. So we have the same situation occurring today that we're already forecasting for next week. If we get a second snow day in here, we know those households are going to be totally depleted of pantry foods. So there'll be even less on their shelves. So this is something we especially want to do for MLK and President's Day.
Now, were you surprised to learn this?
I wasn't surprised to hear it because Dr. Benny Gooden has said before that his decision as to whether or not to close schools is always predicated upon, do I risk not feeding these children? So this is much like a snow day as far as we're concerned. So to hear what was said wasn't a surprise, but yet it is a wake-up call. Because when I think of President's Day, I think, yay, I get an extra day off. I'll check the paper and see sales. I'll go to the movies. I'll do anything but think of the fact that there are kids that are truly dependent upon the meals they receive at school, and they go without. So I'm grateful for their wake-up call, because otherwise I wouldn't have given it a second thought. So hopefully other people do too.
Ken Kupchick is the Director of Marketing and Development for the River Valley Regional Food Bank. We spoke by phone yesterday. More information is available at rvrfoodbank.org or by calling 479-785-0582.
It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the list, photographs I want to see.
Okay.
Opening tomorrow at the Art Center of the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. This should be on your bucket list. This artist is so cool. His name is J.P. Bell, mm-hmm. and he's a doctor.
Okay.
He started taking photos when he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And he fell in love with trains when he was a kid and rode the train from Arkansas to Kansas City to California.
I mean, legally, like as a passenger.
Yes, okay. Like as a passenger, back
right.
in the days when people rode
right.
trains.
Right.
So now he's got this show opening at the Art Center of the Ozarks, which is called Cinematic Rails, Trains in the Movies. He stumbled onto a commercial shoot in 1980 in New Mexico. They were shooting an ad for the Super Bowl for mm-hmm. Miller Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in love because they had this train up and going, and it had a snowplow on it tackling the mountain snow for the commercial.
Right.
So he was hooked. Then he also shot when Biloxi Blues was filmed in Van Buren in 1987. And he has shot, let's see,
there was a movie shot in Arkansas starring Levon Helm and I think Wilford Brimley.
Really?
A critically acclaimed movie. I can't come up with the title now. I think in the early 80s. Give me a day and I'll come up with the title. But
okay.
I wonder if he shot that. I think he was shot in Central Arkansas.
He was on the shoot for Truman and the Tuskegee Airmen.
Okay.
And Appaloosa and True Grit, the new True Grit.
Oh, fun.
So a lot of his photos are on the walls at the Art Center of the Ozarks starting tomorrow. There's a reception from 6 to 8 on February 13th. And the other artist there right now is Sarah Sagerlund from Crystal Bridges, doing a really interesting video installation.
Ah.
Worth going to. You can go anytime. The ACO is open from 9 to 5 daily and 9 to 3 on Saturdays.
Okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And Becca has given us just a place to start when it comes to visual arts in our region in February. Thursday will be, weather permitting, the first Thursday celebration in downtown Fayetteville, when several spots host receptions. The anchor of First Thursday is the Fayetteville Underground on the city square. Thursday night, the Underground will host a reception for Robert Ross's exhibition of watercolors called The Muse in the Wood at the Water's Edge and Watercolor Studies of Watery Places. He is a professor of art emeritus at the University of Arkansas and has been creating work for nearly half a century. The reception Thursday night from 5 until 8:30 at the Underground on the southwest corner of the Fayetteville Square. You can learn more at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Also Thursday night, Sugar, the University of Arkansas Student Gallery, will host a reception for a solo exhibit by V.L. Cox of Little Rock. She mixes two- and three-dimensional media and is known to incorporate found objects to represent history and the American South. She's constructed large backdrops for several organizations, including the Dallas Ballet, the Dallas Opera, and the 1995 National Civil Rights Humanities Awards in Memphis. The opening reception for the exhibit is Thursday night from 5 until 8 at the Sugar Gallery in downtown Fayetteville.
Another Little Rock artist, Vincent Griffin, will be the subject of a reception at Arcega's at the Depot on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The collection is titled Everything Hasn't Happened Yet. It's free and open to the public. The works are collages that the artist says investigate our relationship with the past by changing the context of the imagery. Sources for his work are collected from bookstores, garage sales, and attics. You can get a preview of the show at cargocollective.com/landscape.
And still more on Thursday, Divide Light, Operatic Performance Costumes of Leslie Dill, opens Thursday, and that will remain on display through Sunday, April 13th, in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Though the exhibit opens this week, an opening reception will be Thursday, March 6th, from 5 to 7 p.m., with a screening of the opera Divide Light at 5:30 in Star Theater. The opera is based on the complete works of poet Emily Dickinson and explores a range of emotions from vulnerability and fear to ecstasy, joy, and exhilaration. The event will take place at Walton Arts Center and is free and open to the public. More information at waltonartscenter.org.
In celebration of Black History Month, the university libraries are hosting an exhibit of sculptures and shadow box artworks by Professor Brian Winfred Massey Sr. in the lobby area of Mullins Library through the end of March. Massey sculpted the Silas Hunt Memorial Sculpture, located between Old Main and the Pi Beta Phi Centennial Garden entrance. It was the first work of art commissioned by the university's Public Art Oversight Committee. Massey is a professor of art at the University of Central Arkansas in Conway, primarily a stone carver who works with a variety of stone, including alabaster, soapstone, limestone, marble, and granite. The exhibit at Mullins Library is open to the public and available when the library is open.
This month, you can also hear about art as well as see it. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will host a panel discussion about the art of Carol Clore. Clore, an Arkansas native, was born more than 100 years ago in Earle, and his works often have a surreal take on life in the southern United States. The panel will include experts and collectors and is tomorrow night from 6:30 until 8. It's free, but because of limited space, tickets are required. For more information, crystalbridges.org.
Institutionalized Orthodox religion is growing in Arkansas with numerous denominations, including Saints George and Alexandra churches in Fort Smith. In Little Rock, there's Holy Trinity, as well as Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church. Jonesboro has St. Matthew Evangelist Greek Orthodox. And we have two denominations in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently visited St. Nicholas Antiochian Orthodox Church in Southwest Springdale to learn about the faith and sacred iconography.
The silvery corrugated metal exterior of St. Nicholas Eastern Orthodox Church is early 21st century, designed by noted architect Marlon Blackwell, but the interior is steeped in ancient tradition, says the very Reverend Father John Etchison. Father John leads us through a long, narrow narthex illuminated by candles and icons of saints beneath the red stained glass steeple into the incensed nave where the congregation gathers for Sunday worship. In front of the altar, behind a wrought iron gate, is the iconostasis, which holds a succession of life-size icon reproductions of Jesus, the Virgin Mary, and the saints.
So significant, so necessary. All Orthodox churches must have icons.
The expressionless figures watch Father John as he pulls aside a purple curtain, revealing a large painting of the Virgin Mary in the moment of Immaculate Conception.
So that picture up there, that icon, represents all of our theology in one little picture. And even if someone can't read or has no understanding of theology or is a small child, they can grasp the depth of our church's theology.
Father John says Christianity is rooted in the Orthodox Church, which counts 14 jurisdictions or denominations.
Which means like the Russian Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, various ones. And the church that we're in, they're all in fellowship with one another and in fellowship with Constantinople's, we don't have a pope, but we have a patriarch there that we respect.
Three-fourths of Sunday church service is standing and singing.
We'll have incense going, we'll have the votive lights going, and we'll have the various lights on the altar going, and I dress up in special vestments that are very ancient. It represents my priestly office. And the choir is in the back, and the choir, as they sing, it pushes the praise forward, and we're all here to pray and to love God.
To the left of Father John stands the life-size icon of St. Nicholas.
He did give away gifts, and he, by giving away gifts to people, he kept people from getting in a lot of bad situations. He's a very generous man.
And to the right stands John the Baptist, Father John's patron.
Look at him. He's got that beard and hasn't combed his hair in a long time. He's got some dreadlocks. He's wearing camel skin, and he's eating grasshoppers and honey.
It's said that the Apostle Luke created the very first icon of Mary. Father John encourages church members to have icons at home as well as to make them. To that end, he hosted a class with noted American iconographer Irene Perez last autumn. David Rios, fellowship director at St. Nicholas Orthodox Church, organized the five-day icon workshop, which was open to everyone.
You don't have to be a minor clergy or a priest or a bishop or a deacon or anything to paint them.
Rios, who excels in iconography, brought samples of his work and tools to show us how it's done.
So on this side of the table, what I've laid out are a number of hand-painted icons. This one here is the first icon that I actually painted, and it's Mother of God, Odegitria, which has the Virgin Mary and the Christ Child. For me, it was a very difficult icon to do the first time.
As is tradition, Rios copies ancient icons, liturgical objects steeped in symbolism and darkly rich in color, red signifying divine life, white uncreated light of God, and blue representing human nature. Rios also embellishes the images with gold leaf, which is burnished on, representing heaven. And these paintings may take years to complete.
This is one that's been in process for 7 years. This one is Christ Emmanuel.
Icons traditionally are painted either on braced wooden boards or on thin board, covered in linen, soaked and flattened with glue, with as many as 10 layers of sanded gesso. An image is then transfixed onto the surface or drawn and is ready to paint using a mixture of wine, egg, and pigment.
And so you can mix them just as any other artist would. With, you know, say you put blue and yellow together, you'll get a green. So you create the shades, you put them in your palette, and then you can go ahead and actually do your painting. And so it's not so different than watercolor or oil. When you do watercolor or oil, you're putting darker colors to create the shadows and the darker parts. In icon writing, the difference is that you put the darker colors first and then you add light.
Next to Rio's ceramic palette is a box of dry pigments.
Jarosite, which is a pigment that's used it's sort of the final layer for the face and the hands. I have a bright yellow. I have, where is that color? Chromium green oxide, which we use to actually create the dark color of the flesh. We start with green and then we work up to the more human-looking tones. We have sky blue, earth orange, terra verte green, which is a green color, English red or Venetian red, and vermilion. And you'll see these colors in many kits. They're very, very common to Orthodox icon writing.
Icon writing is meant to be a contemplative practice, David Rio says.
Once you're done, you've gone through this incredible process. It's very prayerful. It's a long process that you've committed 6 days to your life to, and you never look at another icon the same way again, because you can walk up to an icon and you see the technique, you see the work that went into it, and you just appreciate them in a way you didn't before.
And traditionally, finished icons, which are heavily varnished, are not signed, and for veneration purposes, never framed under glass or propped up. David Rios, a budding iconographer, aspires to painting the resurrection someday, he says, but anyone can learn to write icons.
And certainly there is technique, and it takes many years to master, but people with the support of a good instructor in a workshop can certainly make a very beautiful icon the first time, or if it, you know, and they will progress over time.
David Rios was among 9 people who attended Irene Perez's workshop last November at the church. Based in Austin, Texas, the noted artist teaches iconography and also accepts commissions from churches. She describes them as liturgical objects and not holy portraits.
Representation of the person in a transfigured state, in a spiritual state. Their bodies have been changed somewhat, and their spirit has been changed by their communion with divine energies. So even though they look like actual people and you can see, you know, the anatomical features of a human being, their bodies are not represented in a very natural way.
Icons, Greek for image, were painted by the first Christians in the catacombs, and they were disproportioned, flat, stylized renderings, and they've changed over eras. But what all icons have in common are gold leaf halos.
Well, the use of gold leaf is primarily to show this divine light that surrounds everything. And it's a light that lights all of the icon. The divine light comes from the inside of the icon, from the background. Everything is lit with gold. And so it's this image of the divine light just covering everything and lighting everything.
Irene Perez, who studies iconography and works as an iconographer, her work is pure devotion.
In a way that was spiritual, that encompassed all of life, like even the daily things you do, like washing dishes and cooking and everything. And it's not very foreign to a lot of people, this idea of mindfulness, living a liturgical life. So your whole life changes. Just like you use natural materials and you pray when you do the icons, then you start living your entire life that way. So your entire life becomes a liturgy, an act of thanksgiving and praise to God.
And when patrons come to visit the studio of Irene Perez, she says they tell her the atmosphere is peaceful, as if in an Orthodox church. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, you can visit stnicholasar.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Students can bridge the gap between formal education and a professional life after classes with internships, residencies, and apprenticeships. Later this week, students in the University of Arkansas's Hospitality and Restaurant Management program will receive hands-on experience when they execute all maneuvers for a weekend this month at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs. They'll be at the front desk. They'll be doing a turndown service. They'll prepare a special dinner and more. Robert Harrington is the 21st Century Endowed Chair in Hospitality at the U of A. He says the upcoming weekend, which is Friday night, February 21st, and Saturday morning, the 22nd, is the 6th annual such event, and it's called a class act.
We coined the term to represents the students and experiential learning and that they're involved in. Plus, it's a gala event that we want to be very, very nice, very high-end, and very pleasurable for the guests.
This is kind of an immersion, isn't it, for the students?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so We have students that are involved specifically that takes leadership roles in the actual event that we meet every week and are involved in planning the menu, decor, service, and then they'll work with other students that also volunteer and are part of the event. And so it's a great opportunity to both learn how that type of an event operates and is executed, as well as gives them the chance, because there's a lot of industry folks there that interview students and to network with them and interact with them the night of the event and then after the event of the career networking portion of it.
It's as if you were a drama student and someone like, I don't know, Martin Scorsese is out there watching how you do it, and then afterward you're going to go up and talk to him.
That's exactly right.
It's a little intimidating.
That's right. That's right. But it's really interesting, the industry folks working in hotels, restaurants, what have you, really enjoy being able to see the students in kind of their natural environment and how they react in different ways, as opposed to just seeing an interview, more formal kind of setting, and vice versa.
It'd be one thing if you did this and you did it, say, on campus, or you rented a hall. But, man, it's real because you're going to a real place.
Now, that's right. And this will be our sixth one. And every year so far, we've had it at the 1886 Crescent Hotel up in Eureka Springs. And so this idea emerged, I guess, about 7 years ago with discussions with Jack Moyer, the general manager, and offered to turn over the hotel to us. You know, the students are involved in helping to, you know, at the front desk, book the guests in, helping with their luggage. You know, we have turndown service. You know, we have reception. We have different beverage stations. And so the whole thing from start to finish in terms of the guest experience.
For Jack Moyer to do this the first time, I mean, there's a little bit of a leap of faith there. I know that these are students who have gone through it and they've had great training, but still, you're turning your business over.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly, you know, you would have to wonder as a manager, how does that reflect on our business if it doesn't come out well? I mean, people are going to assume that it was something that the hotel did or you know, not knowing it's the students or that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's an interesting public-private kind of relationship, and but it seems to work. It has worked out well.
If you're a student, does it work up like 1 year you're kind of on the periphery and you get more and more involved as you advance in the academic career?
Yes, yes. So, you know, students at different levels may get assigned to tasks that have less responsibility, you know, and as they progress and if they've been at the event and participated, you know, several times or a couple times before, then they'll take much more leadership roles. And it also fleshes out in terms of their interests, you know. So some are interested in events, some are interested in, you know, sales and marketing, some may be interested in the culinary side, some more the front of the house, some wine service, whatever. So we try to fit them in there with their interests and strengths as well.
You have a different theme every year?
Yeah, every year we have a different theme. And so this year is Genießerland, which is German for the land of culinary pleasure or indulgences. And so we chose that theme because we wanted to highlight both the impact of German immigrants into Arkansas that has certainly influenced Arkansas cuisine. We also have a great exchange relationship with a university in Heilbronn, and so we have students from Heilbronn here every semester and our students going over there. Plus we have faculty exchanges and research relationships and that kind of thing. And then also, every year at this event, we acknowledge and recognize someone in the field that's made a significant contribution to the hospitality industry, either in Arkansas, nationally, internationally. This year's recipient, Michael Chafin, who's the general manager and COO for the Capitol Hotel down in Little Rock, has been a member of our advisory board for the past 5 years and has been a great mentor for many of our students and certainly has contributed to the industry. But he actually was born and lived in Germany for the first 10 years, so it also ties into that, coincidentally.
Pleasure or indulgences, those last three words. You're setting the bar high. What's on the menu?
and we hope we can deliver. And so part of the challenge for the students this year was to come up with, you know, menu items, a good menu, but we also wanted to integrate some wow factor with each of those items. So some of the things that we're working on, you know, we're having a salad, which is can be very mundane. But this salad, we're calling it salad shaken, not stirred. So kind of going to the James Bond theme, kind of a martini style, but glass cylinders that we're using to mix the salad. So it'll be micro greens with a German yogurt dressing, some fresh berries, nuts, and rosemary flatbread. And then, in addition to that, once it's shaken, not stirred, we're going to smoke it under glass. So we've got these things called smoking guns. And so we'll put a glass cover on it, add some smoke, and then lift that off when the guest takes the salad and you know, have those aromas and smells and everything as well.
This will all be done in front of the patron?
Yes, absolutely. So trying to make it much more interactive and a lot of those things that will add to that the whole experience that the guest is experiencing.
So you start with the wow.
Yes, we hope so.
Yeah, and then what's on the entrees or what's?
We have salmon cakes that we're doing. So those will also be sautéed in front of the guest with red cabbage chutney, red wine beurre blanc, and we're making a foam that's a hollandaise style kind of thing with that. So integrating some what we call molecular gastronomy techniques with the preparations as well.
Will there be dessert?
There will be dessert, and I don't want to have a spoiler alert for dessert, but we
don't give anything
going
away.
Going to be something very special. We also have braised short ribs, but we're doing those sauerbraten style with appropriate accompaniments. We're doing some German street food. There's a famous dish from Berlin called Currywurst, which is a combination of bratwurst that are sautéed with onions, kind of a barbecue curry sauce. But we're going to do it Ozark style, so we're going to have a base of fried coconut grits, so grits with coconut milk, and then we're adding some shrimp in there, and so it'll be a nice upgrade to some traditional street food as well.
There are reality shows on the Food Network or some of those networks where they have competitions and occasionally they have to build a restaurant from scratch in 24 hours, some ridiculous sort of thing, and you see the backfighting and the sniping. Things go smoothly with the students?
We hope so. It goes relatively smooth. I mean, there are always challenges.
But you kind of want a little bit of challenge, don't you?
That's right. And one example is last year in the dining room at the Crescent Hotel. I don't know if Jack Moyer wants me to mention this, but they were doing some construction upstairs. And in the afternoon, all of a sudden, a pipe breaks because they cut through a water main and you get water flowing down through the ceiling. So having to, in the midst of trying to get set up for dinner, move things around and get everything squared away, it was actually a great learning opportunity for the students to say, hey, things don't always go as planned and you have to react and make sure the guest never knows.
But you are in the Crescent, so you could always blame that it was a ghost.
That's true.
Right?
I'll have to remember that. Yeah, we'll use that. As
Robert Harrington is the 21st Century Endowed Chair in Hospitality at the University of Arkansas. The event, titled A Class Act, is February 22nd and 23rd. Prices for different packages exist. It is open to the public. More information can be found at the link at our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ozarks at Large is also supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Snow.
Is that a place?
It is a place. It's not quite in our listening area. It's in between Salesville and Flippin.
I feel like you just made all that up.
No.
I almost feel like it's a cartoon of some sort.
No, in Marion County.
Okay.
And if you
No, I have seen it on a map.
Yeah. If you're going to Lakeview mm-hmm. from Fayetteville mm-hmm. and you don't want to go through downtown Yaleville, mm-hmm. which I don't know why you'd want to skip that.
Why would you not?
Because it's a pretty downtown, but it does shave off about 10 minutes if you're going to Lakeview.
Oh.
Then you're going to go towards Summit. Mm-hmm. And you'll go through Snow.
Okay.
There you go.
I'm going through plenty of snow here.
Yes, you are, and ice and whatnot.
Yes.
If you plan to do anything, check, make sure it's happening, because it's probably not. That's our disclaimer.
That is our disclaimer.
You're probably not doing that.
But just call and double check. You never know. Some people were able to get out. Some are not. So.
Yeah, Yeah, some are. Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antonia Grajeda.
You and Christina will be on the program tomorrow.
That's the plan.
That is the plan. All right. Please, everyone, be careful out there. Don't do anything silly.
Have a good Tuesday.